I want to welcome you all back to our discussion section session. This is, I'd like to welcome you back to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. This week's topic is called Beyond the Wire, Advancing Civil Society in Afghanistan. Before we start today, I want to announce next week's topic. Next week, we have David Percussin coming. He's one of Canada's top defense and foreign policy analysts. There's actually two sessions, and they're being put on in association with the Lethbridge chapter of the United Services Institute. That's the people who brought us Romeo Dallaire in February. So in the afternoon, at the noon session for SACPA, the topic will be missile defense. And on Thursday evening at 5:30 p.m., Dr. Percussin will be speaking on Canada's role in Afghanistan. So you've heard one perspective today. Next week will obviously be more of an emphasis on the military and Canada's role in Afghanistan. That event will be held at the Legion, and it starts at 5:30 p.m. Everybody is welcome. The cost of the three-course dinner is $18. And details will be on the SACPA website. Okay, for today, we'll begin the question period. It'll last for 30 minutes. And because we don't have microphones in the audience, we just ask people to stand in the middle of the room, and our speaker will... She was going to repeat the questions. Is that not... Okay, we'd like to ask you actually to come forward to the mic to ask your question. So we're asking you to be brave and come forward to do that. And people should try to limit themselves to one question. And our speaker also is a special guest. She will announce who just arrived back from Afghanistan. I'd like to welcome Janice Eisenhower back to the podium.
So, questions. The mic is yours.
I've got a voice that carries me. Thanks. I just like to ask, I mentioned at our table that I happen to be a Catholic. And as a result of being a Catholic, when we come talk about charities, we have a branch of the Catholic Church that's set up, and it's called Development and Peace. And I have always just said to myself, just about without exception, if I can do it, I will give them the money that I expect to donate to some charity. And the reason I do that is I listen to all the bickering about it's all wasted. And I feel that maybe the Catholic Church might waste the least. And so the question is, to these ladies that were here, have you noticed... Any advancement, any results from what you're doing? Because I'd like to commend you for it.
Thank you. And your name?
John Boris.
Thank you, Mr. Boris. Sibylla? First of all, I'd like to say Development and Peace has done very good work at the grassroots level, which is where our heart lies. Have we seen results? Would you like to start with that?
Yeah. Also, there are days when I have my doubts, especially in the evening after I've come home from the jails for the women, where I see every time I go that 60% of the women are in for so-called moral crimes, have never seen a lawyer under the age of 16 often, and clueless about what's going on. And I come home and the commanders are the ones who run, not the warlords, but the new commanders run the jails. Again, has been changed, and we had to start again arguing that we don't want to have male guards because they rape the women at night. So those are the days when I think, here we go again, here we start all over again. It's pretty hopeless. But then there are many moments, too, when I can say we have convinced a family not to sell their daughter for marriage, who is 8 years or 10 years old, and they are now sending her off to school, and we try to do an income-generating activity for women in an area that usually gets no services, And we have done just an evaluation of one of the programs I'm head of, which is setting up support groups for war widows to help themselves with the women who presented very strongly with lots of symptoms around psychological and emotional problems. I'm talking not just mild depression, I'm talking self-mutilation, I'm talking very serious convulsions. And after a year, 85 out of 85 members in different groups, 80 came out with no symptoms. So I think that is utterly successful, and those are the moments that take me through those days when I have my doubts.
And I guess I'd add to that, too, it isn't only the money. We see tangible results from the donations that we do send because we can see the schools, we can hear from the students, we can hear from the women, we can see the kids in the orphanage getting fed. There's many tangible results. But the solidarity is critical as well. And it's hard to articulate how that is. I know that I work directly with my colleague Roya Romani in Kabul, and often she's emailing late at night, oh, that report wasn't very good, I really don't feel that well, it's been such a hard week, but, you know, is it okay? And we're back to her immediately by email and supporting her. And really it's those words of encouragement and solidarity that mean so much. So it's important that we as individual Canadians do keep our attention in Afghanistan, because it shows that solidarity to the people there.
And I want to add, too, this has to be a long-term commitment. Nothing's going to change very fast. This country has been affected by 25 years of war, and I'm always saying even before the war we had structures that were clearly misogynist and the women were totally oppressed. So if there's anything that's going to change, we just cannot do a short deal for 3 years or 5 years. The Canadian government is, in my personal opinion, totally behind with that. Other members in the international community, like the Scandinavian governments, have stood up and have made commitments long-term. They know that is necessary. And I think that's really a commitment we have to ask from our government as well.
Mm-hmm. We're just going to shift this microphone over for the sake of the audio recording. Just like to remind people, and I need to learn this myself, we have to speak directly into this little object.
Hello. Thank you, ladies. I can tell you that I know this lady very well, and she's worked with many organizations internationally and does fantastic work. If I could be her when I grew up, I would feel like a saint. My question, Donna Fairhurst of Pincher Creek. My question, and John at our table brought it up, is one of the things that people here in gatherings like this, who all belong to various organizations that assist with and do aid and are concerned about public affairs, is how do we ensure that the dollars we send are getting where we want them to go? For instance, you know, I'd write a check today for a teacher's salary for a year if I knew it got to the teacher. So when we're working with the organizations, whether we're a service club or an individual, and we want the money to go to specific projects in Afghanistan, what's the best way to ensure it gets where we want it to go?
The first thing is, it isn't easy. You have to do your homework. Research the organizations you support. I know there's a trend now with donors, and it's an important trend, is to give sustainable donations. So choose an organization that you very much value. Research, talk to people, read their literature. Make sure you can feel very confident that they are doing what they say they're doing with your money and you're happy with where that goes. And then sustain that organization. Stay with them. Help them for the long term. That is critical. And really, why we founded Women for Women back in the late 90s was from that very seed of an idea. How can we be sure that the good work we're going to do as volunteers and the money we're going to raise is going to get in the hands of Afghan women and not be lost in the administration, the corruption, and all the ways we know we hear about in donor dollars? So that is why we are 100% volunteer and why 100% of the money we raise goes to schools and education initiatives in Afghanistan. It was the mandate for what the work is that we do. But again, it isn't easy. You can't just make assumptions. Do your homework. Read up. Listen. Talk to people. Stay engaged with that organization that you're wanting to fund and make it long-term.
I'm Bev Mendel Atherstone. Thank you, ladies. My husband and I and our two teenage daughters spent 2.5 years in Pakistan from 1989 to 91. And at that time, there were at least 3 million Afghan refugees along the borders between Afghanistan and Pakistan, particularly in Peshawar and Quetta. Closer, but then it burbles. Okay, I just want to tell you a success story and how a balance of power was shifted within the homes. The refugees were housed in tents, huge tent cities, and Save the Children, which is one of my favorite NGOs, came in and gave the women who could not leave their tents embroidery materials and cloth. And the reason I'm telling you this is because I see your beautiful chemise looks very much like many of the blouses and pillows and other things that were made by Afghan women through Save the Children. So because all the materials were brought to the women, they would do the embroidery, then they would exchange the finished products for new materials, and then they would receive money. They became valuable in the households, and as someone very cogently said at our table, you're not going to beat up your wife if the next day that means she can't sew and couldn't bring in the money. So the balance of power shifted, and the women were bringing in the money. I just wonder if Save the Children was the NGO behind your chemise, and maybe you could tell us about ways that women can make money in currently in the situation in Afghanistan, if there's some program like that.
Well, this shalwar kameez is from Afghan Women's Resource Center. They are a small Afghan-based organization. We try to support local, grassroots, Afghan-based organizations. It's a group of Afghan women who we've been working with since the beginning and helping to, again, provide that long-term support. So we select a few partners to work with on the ground in Afghanistan so that we can know that our funding will be able to sustain them rather than taking on more than what we can handle. As far as the work for women in Afghanistan, oh, there's such a myriad of ways, and I wish there were many, many more ways. Actually, sewing and needlework is probably one of the hardest and most detrimental to the health of women, particularly their eyesight. They tell us, and we still can't believe, that this work is hand-done, fine, fine, detailed work. It's all the women know, and most of the time they have terrible lighting. They're exploited in many cases. So, again, it's that thing of staying involved with who your donating dollars are going to, making sure that they're not supporting, say, carpet weaving that is harmful for women and children, which is often the case. But there are good organizations that are doing that kind of work. There's chicken farming. I mean, there's all sorts of work. I think, Sibylla, you could address that in terms of some of the opportunities for women.
Yeah. Also, I want to point out that our organization does not do, unfortunately, income-generating activities or any kind of training in that way. Our women usually are not able to do that kind of work. They have, for example, their fingertips chopped off during the Taliban regime because they had painted fingernails. And so they are disabled physically or emotionally and cannot even continue to do any kind of work like this. Other than the electricity issue, even in Kabul, we do not have regular electricity. So for getting light in the wintertime, it gets dark early, like here. I'm also here because I want to meet later with some of the Rotary people who are here because they are interested in thinking about starting an income-generating activity, particular for this group of emotionally vulnerable women in Kabul. And I think that is slightly different than what sort of on the average is provided for in Afghanistan, if there is any initiative to help women. But I think the key to the success is, again, like what Beth mentioned, women have to have some kind of economic strength to support not only their families, but to be valued in their families. At this point, because we talk about an extreme patriarchal culture, women are valued. If they live in the countryside, they're valued because they work in the fields, but then they are valued as an object of exchange because they bring in money as brides to the household they are coming from. And that means also they have to be virgins. And that means their mobility is restricted. And then there are all these kind of other issues around that. Can they go and see a doctor or not? Mostly not. Not only because there is no health services, but because the family is worried that something could expose her to a male doctor or a male nurse. And then right there, she will not be good marriage material anymore. And her bride price will go down. So these are all issues that affect the role of women in that country. And so I think any kind of economic activity that sort of values a woman not only practically and in an applied way, but also symbolically is very important. And this is also where some of our initiatives have to go into.
Of course.